So, good morning to all on day 11 in Sfira Talma. Rav Shin Samachai, you are in the second for Shabbat. Sorry, look at that.
Shabbos.
Yes,
Shabbos.
Shabbos, you too. Saying good Shabbos, everyone. Today is Daf Gimel, and we're holding on Daf Beis, on the Beis on the bottom. So, to review briefly the structure of our Mishnah, which we'll need to keep in mind today, in order to understand the Gemara's Kasha. Basically, the Mishnah was arranged in two separate sections, each one which has a discussion of a Baal Bayit and a discussion of an Oni. The introduction of the Mishnah is that we have two cases which equal really four for both whatever, Bifnim and Bechutz. Okay. Our assumption was that the Bifnim and Bechutz, according to Rashi, is it's talking about somebody who's Omeid Bifnim, somebody who's Omeid Bechutz, not where the events take place. And so we broke the Mishnah down, therefore, because really obviously if we have two sets of two cases, each of one consisting of two examples, we end up with 16 total cases here, because there's two participants in each case. But we only talk for some reason about a total of eight. And that's what we need to discuss today. Why is that true? So the two cases, the first two cases were the Oni, the person, again, Oni is a shortcut for somebody who's standing in Rishos HaRabim, and the Baal HaBayit is a shortcut for somebody who's standing Bifnim. And so the cases that we had were the two cases for each, is where each one of them does a Yetziyah and a Hachnasah. So that the Oni's Hachnasah, which begins the Mishnah, is where he takes his full hand and puts it into the Rishos of the Baal HaBayit and drops what he's holding into the hand of the Baal HaBayit. So he did the entire thing. The case of the Hotza'ah that the Oni did is when he takes something out of the hand of the Baal HaBayit, pulls his hand out, and then he does the hanacha when he stops, apparently, in his own rishos. So in each one of these cases, he did a full akira, hotza'a, and a hanacha, the three components. Now, in that case, if we think about it, there's obviously another participant, although he's a completely passive participant. And those are an additional two cases that are part of the 16 possibilities in the Mishnah. The Baal HaBayit has been sitting there like a shelf. He's holding something in his hand. He doesn't move. The Oni either takes it out of his hand or will deposit something into his empty hand, depending on whether he's doing half an asah or a hotzah. In the inverse case, we also have a passive participant. The inverse case of the Baal HaBayit takes something which is in his own hand, deposits it in the hand of the Oni. Again, the Oni is just standing there being completely passive. Or he removes something from the hand of the Oni being completely passive, and he now takes it into his rishos, hotza'ah and hachnasah. So we have really eight things to discuss right there. We only talk about, for some reason, four of them. Apparently because passivity doesn't interest us. We see that as a ma'aseh itztibah b'yom. We're talking about people who do something, not people who happen to be there. We're not discussing their lack of participation in the malacha. Okay, but then when we get to the next stage, where we're talking about where there were actually two participants in each one of the malachas, and again, we start with the Yoni. He's standing outside, puts his hand into the other rishos, but instead of depositing the contents of his hand into the open hand of the Baal HaBayit removes it from his hand. And the other case in which in the Reisha, the Yoni removes something from the hand of the Baal HaBayit, in this case, he holds his hand in the rishos of the Baal HaBayit, deposits something in the hands of the Oni. And then the Oni removes it. Now there, again, the Mishnah seems to be presenting the Shtayim Shein Arba for the Oni, because the Oni in the two cases there, Hotzah v'Hachnasah, hasn't completed the entire Malacha. In one of the cases, he was not doing really the Akira because the Baal HaBayit stuck it into his hand. In the other case, he was not doing the Hanocha because the Baal HaBayit removed it from his hand. But there's two cases right there for the non-Chayev participant as well that we don't talk about. Because we can't say he's passive. He certainly isn't passive. The Balabayit in both of those cases was active. Either removed it from the hand of the Yoni or deposited it in the hand of the Yoni. So right there, we already have an additional four cases. So we should have, before continuing any further, we have two cases now, an additional two cases for Anani, for Yishtayim Shein Arba, which is really what we have for the Yoni. The Mishnah is enumerating it. But the truth is, in the case of the Yoni, lie an additional two cases for the Balabayit. He either deposited something in the hand of the Yoni or removed something for the hand of the Yoni. So we now already have our Shnayim Shein Arba for the Balabayit as well. When we add now the next case, which is the parallel case for the Balabayit to the Balabayit's case in the Reisha, namely, the Balabayit now extends his hand and has the Yoni remove it, the contents from his hand, in the Rishut HaRabi. Or, when we have the Balabayit now, who is going to be taking what somebody else puts in his hand, you remove it from the Rishus of the Yoni. In both of those cases, the Yoni was also active. Not only the Balabayit. So the Balabayit's two additional cases now actually equal six cases for the Balabayit, because we had two in the case of the Yoni, in the second case of the Yoni. Let's iconize, please. Put a picture in your mind. We have Oni, Balabayit, Oni, Balabayit. The first two, Oni, Balabayit, is the other participant was completely passive. Okay? So the Oni did 2x, the Balabayit did 2x. Inverted, of course. In one it's Hachnasa Hotsa, and the other it's Hotsa Hachnasa. That's your first icon. We can effectively ignore the additional two cases which are on this side of the page and this side of the page, that is to say the Balabayit and the Oni, because they're completely passive. Now let's move on to your next icon. Again, Oni, Balabayit. In both of those cases, the Oni does not do the whole thing, and the Balabayit does not do the whole thing. Which by definition means somebody else was active in both of these two cases. Now we're counting, as I'm pointing out, in the first case, which is the third case of the Mishnah, the first case of the second set in the Mishnah, which is the case of the Oni, we're counting two additional events for an Oni, apparently. The Oni now has put his full hand into the Rishus of the Balabayit, but he doesn't deposit at the Balabayit now. The second case is that the Oni puts his empty hand into the Rishus of the Balabayit. Balabayit deposits something into his hand, the Oni removes it. It would appear that those are the two cases that we're counting for the Oni from the simple structure of the Mishnah. After all, the first case of Oni we counted the two acts that the Oni did. So in the second case we should be counting the two acts that the Oni did. Meaning, he stuck his hand in full, or he stuck his hand in empty but pulled his hand out full. Right? Those are the two cases. Why are we ignoring what the Balabayit did in those two cases? He was exceedingly active. He either deposited it, doing the Akira, or he did the Hanukkah by removing what was in the hands. Continuing on to the fourth case of the Mishnah. Fine, so then that's four cases right there. Shnayim Shein Arba, Shnayim Shein Arba. Exactly. Shnayim Paturim. That's precisely the idea. So you already have now your eight cases. When we add now the fourth case of the Mishnah, which is the case of the Balabayit, who's doing the same thing, an empty hand out, or a full hand out, both of them are active. That already gives us another four cases. So instead of eight, we have 12, even if we want to ignore the two alternatives in the Reisha where we have two passive participants of four cases, holding your hand in a Rishus HaYokin and having somebody deposit in or remove from it, holding your hand in a Rishus HaRabim and having somebody remove from it and deposit into it, correct? So ignore those cases. Take out four out of the 16 cases. You're left with still four cases of Chiyuv, eight cases of Ptur. How are you going to distinguish between the eight cases of Ptur to make them now only four cases?
Call it Shnayim Shein Arba.
Well, that's what you're calling me. You're saying Shnayim Shein Arba. It's like you set up a Mishnah, and then in the way in which you structured a Mishnah, you give us not a clue as to where you get your numbers. And it's a crazy way to set up a Mishnah. You set up a mission, you say, Shnayim Shein Arba Bafnim, Shnayim Shein Arba Bachutz, then you offer us 16 cases, and we don't know which of the cases you mean. Where are the Shnayim Shein Arba cases? So again, the first two Babas, which are the two subsections of the first part of the Mishnah, it's easy to figure out why over there we would only count two of the cases. Because they're drastically different. Somebody's doing absolutely nothing in each one of those cases, and somebody's doing absolutely everything in each of those two cases. So out of the first eight cases, I can derive four. But I have a much more difficult time of understanding the last cases, the last eight cases that we have over here. How do I take out of those eight only four? Now, there's a lot of ways that I can parse those cases, right? I can say, okay, maybe only the person who began his movement of his hand. He's the one that we're referring to. For some reason, we won't talk about the other guy.
Or redundancy.
No, what do you mean? Well, redundancy. There's no redundancy. We're counting separately an act of bringing near or throwing afar.
Once he learned from the Balabai, are there some cases you could certainly see that derive from each other?
Well, then that would be true of all of them. Then you'd only have six. You only need six instead of eight. So that can't be a solution, redundancy. Anyway, so one way of parsing it, look at the guy who's doing the act, meaning the movement of the hand. Who's doing the hand movement? Maybe we like not hand movements, initial hand movements. Maybe we like the hutzah part. Where, in whose hand was the chepetz at the point that it was crossing the boundary between Rishut HaRabim and Rishut HaYachid? Which is more psychological than anything else, because there's nothing particularly effective about it in terms of the chiyuv. A third way, correct? Hotzah is not particularly nogea, the movement of the object, any more than it is the akir na'anoch of the object.
But it is crossing from one Rishut.
Who cares?
Well,
that's a prejudice that you have. Right?
No.
Yes, it is. It's absolutely a prejudice. Yeah, you're used to thinking about, in your human terms, you're used to thinking about
Hotzah. No, that's when it makes sense.
No, absolutely not. You are not chayav when you cross a boundary. Not chayav in the least. You cross boundaries all day long, carrying from Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaRabim, Rishut HaYachid, all day long, walking through everybody's yard, out into the street beyond it, into the next guy's yard, and not be chayav once. So clearly, Hotzah has nothing to do with moving a chayfetz from one Rishut to another. In each case, you would need a separate akir na'anocha. It's just a prejudice that you have as a child. You're not supposed to be carrying something. And that means I can't walk out. You're fine, it's a prejudice. But in terms of the structure of a Mishnah, why parse the Mishnah that way? That's when we're supposed to start. On religion time, of course. He had the wrong time. He's still going with our old clock at 8:15. At least an apple? Something? Another way to parse the mission would be to say only the individual that could have completed the act and been chayev is listed as important. So whoever did the Akira in that case would be important. It's a little bit strange, because, I mean, when you're doing an Akira and not moving your hand, you're basically chewing a stick of gum. I mean, who cares? What is he saying? I picked up something and put it in somebody's hand. Thank you. I mean, yes. What else did you do today? Read any good books? Why would I want to put that in the Mishnah as the case that's put? So in each one of these parsings, we have some kind of problem in looking at the structure of the Mishnah. So you can see that the Tana has really gone out of his way to make life tough. As he's forcing us to consider each one of the different variables here. So he makes it easy for us in the first four cases. We can come to an easy conclusion, which four out of the eight. And then he makes it very difficult in the last eight cases to figure out what four he's talking about. Okay, now let's take a look at that in the Gemara and see how the Gemara finds it. Amalei Rav Matan Labai. Hatzmani Hagyan? I don't know. I mean, the Tana claims that's eight, but when I count, I get 12. Tantisrei Hagyan, I see 12 cases. Said Abayatim, I don't understand. How do you see 12 cases? I mean, last time I counted, there were 16 cases. You obviously have already figured out a way in which you're defining which cases to include, aren't you? So, if you're bothered by that problem, and you want to consider the other participants in the act besides the one that we're referring to, don't we have 16 cases? Shitzrei Havim. Omar Leis, so Rav Matzah said to him, well, obviously that doesn't bother me. In other words, in the first Bavas, which is the first section of the Mishnah, it has two subsections, of Avanim Balabayit. So Akashi, Bishlam and Bava Duration, that Bava that includes the Oni and the Balabayit, I mean, obviously, Potter Umutar Lokatan. I have no interest in considering a case where somebody is sitting there passively. I mean, it's not just that he's Patur, it's that, you know, he's Mutar. What is he doing? He's holding his hand. I mean, what are you supposed to say? You're not allowed to hold something in your hand on Shabbat. I mean, obviously, he's Mutar, so that's not part of the Mishnah at all, is it? Tosfos says, I mean, isn't it? If somebody is using your hand as an act of Chilul Shabbat, isn't that at least, maybe it would be Lifnei Iver, assuming there'd be no other way you could put something down, which is called technically Trei Avri Denahar. You have two people who have a Nozir, classic case of Nozir on one side of a river, and you're on the other side, and the only grapes in sight are right there, and you hand him the grapes. There'd be no way you'd get the grapes without your handing him, so then it's Lifnei Iver. If you could get the grapes anyway, it's not Lifnei Iver, but it's certainly called Misayeli De Dvar Avera. You seem to be supporting him. After all, you're sitting on the same table with the conservatives. You don't want to do that. So what do you do about that? Okay, so Tosfos says, we're talking about a guy. Who's to say who the other guy was? So why should, in other words, he's basically irrelevant. He's doing a Maisik Tzibah B'Alma. The Mishnah is not coming to teach us Dinim of Lifnei Iver and Mishayel De Dvar Avera or joining the ACLU or whatever it is. The Mishnah is coming to discuss the Dinim of Shabbos. As far as the Dinim of Shabbos is concerned, let us effectively create a test tube situation in which this guy is not part of the picture. That I can understand myself.
Tzedakah really pulled them together.
Yes, I suppose
tzedakah,
we'll have to say.
Because Lugavi Tzedakah, Shabbos is too, but Tzedakah can only have it.
But it doesn't say anything about Tzedakah. It might have been weapons.
Well, like Ani.
We might be talking about bullets.
Yes.
So, that doesn't bother me, says Rav Masa Tabaya, but what does bother me is the last cases. Well, wait a minute. Could you say that again? Could you say that the case of Shnehan Paturim actually means Patur Umutar? I thought the rule is that the word Patur, when it comes to Ilchot Shabbat, has a very definite technical meaning. This is an aside. Let's just examine this aside for a moment. As the Gemara does, wait a second. Your semantics are troubling. Mi'ike b'kulei Shabbos Patur Umutar? There's such a thing as, quote, Patur, unquote, which equals Mutar when it comes to Shabbat. V'yomar Shmuel, Kolp Turei de Shabbat, Patur Aval Asur. Anytime the word Patur is used in Shabbat, it has the technical meaning of being an Isur de Rabbanan. Except for three cases where it uses the word Patur and where it actually means you can go right ahead and do it. Bar Mehanitzlat de Patur Umutar. The case of Tzedat Tzvi. The case of Tzedat Tzvi is where a guy sits down on the door of his house after a deer has wandered in. Now he's chayev if he fills up the entire door. Because that's the act of tzedah. He's now trapped at tzvi. You sit down in front of this guy in such a way that you also block the door. But the door is already blocked. The tzvi is already trapped. If the other guy, the first guy, now gets up and you remain where you are, it says you're patur. Well, then you're patur. I mean, you didn't do anything. You're completely mutar. So that case means mutar, even though it says patur. The other case is tzedat nachash, where you're worried about getting bitten by a snake, and you trap the snake, but you have no interest in the snake, you're just trying to get him away from you, which is, you know, preserve the Pope and keep him safely away from us, kind of thing. Because I have no interest in preserving the Pope for him, but I do, or in this case, it's being tzedat nachash, but I just want to keep him away. This is called Melacha Shena Tzurcha L'Gufa, because the purpose of Tzedah is, the classic purpose of Tzedah is to have what it was that I was sad. And therefore, even though it says Patur, and normally even a Melacha Shena Tzurcha L'Gufa, you are Asur, but where it comes here to avoid a snake bite, the Rabbanan did not Asur at all, Tzurcha, and it's Patur Mutar, And the third case is made fis mursa, somebody has a painful blister, and he makes a hole to remove the lymph from the blister, and in that case, he's, even though normally he would be not allowed to do that, even though it's a tzricha legufa, just wants to get rid of the liquid, but in this case, it's mutter because it's painful, so they didn't even ask it. But that means that all other cases, such as the case of our Mishnah, where it says patur, it's got to mean that it's a sermon rabbanan, and you're claiming, Rav Masna, that you're not troubled by the eight cases in the Reisha, that out of eight we should have only four, because we're not interested in the case of the guy who's mut. No, said Rav Masna, this now ends our aside here, okay? This has been a tangential semantic discussion. Shmuel was only talking about somebody who does something where you can discuss if he's potter to do it, he's mutter to do it. If he doesn't do anything, there's lots of cases where somebody doesn't do anything, which is mutter. Now this is actually a little problematic because the case of the tzatzvi is passive, but that we'll talk about when we get to Shmuel. It's not really very important to us. Getting back now to our question. Rav Masna says to Abai, I'm still troubled by the fact that there's 12. And there's not, forget about 16. But there certainly isn't 8. There's 12. Mikolmakom Tartis Rehavya. Well, on that answer, Abai, Peture de Atibuladech Yuv Chatat Kachashi. De Lo Atibuladech Yuv Chatat Lo Kachashi. The Tana of the Mishnah is interested in discussing those Chiyuvim, those Chiyuvim Drabonim, that is, the Tzurim Drabonim, in which the Isser is not just participation, but participation that is liable to lead to a Dioraita. And what does that mean? Now that doesn't help us all that much. Rashi understands that what it means is that the individual who begins, does the Masa Akira. Whether he moved his hand out of the Rishut or he didn't move his hand out of the Rishut, he is the one that, if he continues doing what he's doing, he is then going to be completing the malacha. So a person who moves his hand, even if he now moves it into the hand of someone who's going to pull it out of Rishos Ayochin into Rishos Rad, the Balabai deposits it in the hand of the Ani. Being as he might have decided on his own, you know what, instead of giving it to this guy, why don't I just pick it out myself? So then he would have been chayev. Those are the cases that we list. Another way of looking at it, which Rashi brings from his own rabbein, is that the one who begins the malacha by moving his hand is who we're talking about. So even though my initial hand movement was with an empty hand, I put my hand into the Rishus Rabbah Abaye, there's nothing in it. I'm not doing anything. Somebody now puts something into my hand. But I'm chayev because I began the act which ultimately turns out to be the malacha, which is rather difficult as well, because I didn't do anything when I move an empty hand into someone. Why does that have to do with the malacha? With the fact that it can end up turning into a different situation, which would be a malacha.
Does it make more sense that you have the chayfas?
The third possibility, which actually the Rosh seems to understand is the meaning of Rashi's Rabbi, even though it doesn't seem that way, is that we're talking about, you see, when he comes late, he brings a peace offering. Thank you, friend. This is a shailas. What do you spend more on? Chatas basdanka. So the other possibility is indeed, as Scott is suggesting, that we would be talking about this, how the Rosh actually learns it. Tosis brings possibilities like this, that the one who is moving his hand out of one Rishus to another, so whether he's moving it with something already in it, and he did the Akira, or whether he is removing it after somebody put something in it, and he's going to do the Hanocha. But the point is that two-thirds of the Malacha, so to speak, the whole active and central element of the Hutzah was done by that individual. he held the chafetz at the time that it was going from one rishus to another and had achieved part of that either through taking it out or setting it down. So it wasn't just that it was in the air, he was really involved in moving it from one rishus to another. So three possibilities here of how to understand the four cases out of the eight possible cases that are mentioned in the second part of the Mishnah. So, p'ture da'ati b'ledei chiyuv chatat k'chashiv, de'lo ati b'ledei chiyuv chatat lo k'chashiv. But now, getting back to the cases, it does say, shnehem p'turim. How could they both be p'tur? The bottom line is that between the two of them, they accomplished some lechet Shabbat, did they not? So, why wouldn't we look at that? There's two ways of understanding this. Why wouldn't we look at that as a joint activity? In which case they should both be chayev for Malachat Shabbat.
Chayev or pater?
Chayev. They are pater.
If one person can do it and two people do it?
Well, we don't know that yet. That's also part of the limud that this the pasuk that we're going to bring is useful for. Tosis doesn't like that approach. Who cares? So what if a malacha was done between you? The Gemara's kasha would be meaningful only on the one who completes the malacha. Because in doing the hanacha, I have now transferred a chavetz from rishus to rishus. For all intents and purposes, the way in which the initial part was done is to me irrelevant. What I want to do is put a chavetz in a new rishut where it wasn't before. So why shouldn't I view that as the Malachat Shabbat? So somebody else managed to do the mechanical part of it for me. But now I'm the one who finalized the act as being an actual movement from one rishus to another. So why shouldn't I be chayav? Tanya Rebbe Omer, look at the pasuk. The pasuk that discusses the chiyav of echatas. So over there it's talking about inepesh achat techeta bishkaga. So first of all, it's referring to nefesh achat. We'll see there's really two different things that are involved here. Ba'asota achat mi mitzvot Hashem. So that ba'asota we darshan ba'asot ota, meaning ha'ose et kula, velo ha'ose et mikzata. Only someone who does an entire melacha, not who achieves the melacha, is the one who will be chayev. Which implies that yachid v'yasaota chayav, shnayim v'yasuota piturim. Tosus insists that this is basically a repetitive statement. In other words, when we're saying aset kula v'lo aset mikzata, and yachid v'yasaota chayav shnayim patur, those are not two separate limudim. In other words, you might think that I could separate those two ideas. Let's say I have myself and my friend together pick up something, together carry it out, and together set it down. That's shnayim shosim ota paturim. Each were oses kula. The other case would be, I pick it up entirely, hand it to my friend who sets it down entirely. So there might be a way to understand the Gemara, which it's saying, oset kula v'lo oses mikzata, doing an akira, and not doing anoch, doing anoch and not doing akira is not enough. The second one, shnayim yasuot apturim, is where together two people do the entire act, but one of them could have done the act by himself. Okay, the truth is that you would be potter in both of those cases. However, Tosfos says we'll see later on that the Gemara seems to require a different source for the second one, and we can't learn it out from ba'asota, which is a focus on the melacha, rather than on the number of people.
Does intention have anything to do with it?
Everything to do with it, but in this case the intention was throughout. We're assuming. In other words, what Richie is questioning is whether somebody else's akira almanat to be motzi, if I were to do a hanacha, and we wouldn't have had this pasuk, if I were to do a hanacha that was unaware or careless about the intent of getting it out of that rishus, whether I would be chayev. And the answer to that is certainly not. Melechet machshevet asra Torah, that's not the point.
But if you were,
assumption is that if I were, I would nonetheless be potter because of this new halakha. that you can't have two participants in a malacha. And furthermore, a malacha is defined by its entirety, not by its achievement, which are two separate issues. The question is, do we learn them both out of this pasuk? Fine. So it doesn't say we don't learn them both out of this pasuk, and this is just a redundancy of language. Omer Chia Bar Itmar Nami, we also have a ma'amar to the same effect. Omer Chia Bar Gamda, Nizreka Mipicha Bura, basically out of the group research here. So we never, in a think tank, we don't tell you precisely who came up with the idea, but we did come up with this in the Rand Corporation. Namely, Ba'asota Yachid Sha'asa Chayav Shnayim Sha'asa Uhu Pituri.
Just spend a second on Nizreka.
Yeah. Nizreka.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Nizreka.
Ah, you like the Nizreka, do you? We've spoken about the Nizreka before. Just pointed out that Nizreka seems to refer to an emergent idea. In other words, when something is Purish, we know something else. It means it can't be attributed. It's like when we say something, you find that Pesach Anuyas, right? It's Purash. If it's Bimekomo, Koko Guel, Mefts, Kemefts, Almefts, Adam. It has to get out of the plita, so to speak. Nizra kami pi chabura. So we look at the chabura as now a meta unit, in which each individual is a participant, but it's the chabura who speaks. And in that sense, we talk about its poresh from them. We use the word nizrika. Because we can't trace it to anything in particular. It's like trying to attribute a thought to a particular set of neurons in your brains. It's nizrika, basically. When you're talking, we don't attribute it to any particular group of neurons because we recognize it as an activity that's emergent from it, not has nothing to do with any neuron, they're just a bunch of switches, right?
As an individual, everyone, they all immediately identify with it.
No, it's just that I can't say that I contributed more than you contributed. The basic idea of yours in our discussions of this issue, this is what worked out. We all understand that. It's not like the old days where somebody used to make a discovery, you know.
It has a feeling of suddenness to it.
Well, that's always true when something suddenly emerges, isn't it?
Like total.
It's malchut, basically. Boimine Rav Mired. Now we get on to the next question, which we mentioned when we were learning in the Mishnah, which is the strange relationship to the hand. There's this hand seems to be doing a lot of different things that are inconsistent. Because on the one hand, we view it as a place in which I can beminiyat something, and yet on the other hand, I view it as a place in which something is not munach. The proof is that if I am the balabayit and I put something down in the hand of the ani, and now the ani removes it from the rishus of the balabayit, the ani is potter. But if something in a hand is considered to be munach, then the ani should be chayim. If the hand is an object that's in another rishus, a space within a space, then relative to the hand, if something is munach, then it should be munach in that rishus. If we view the hand as being in a rishus bifnei atzmo, so then it shouldn't accomplish a hanacha when I put it into the hand of the ani, if I'm the balabayit. And yet it says that I'm chayim if I do that. So we need to explore the status of a hand. So that's the next case. Boi mine rav mirevi. Hit ino chaviro ochlin umashkin. Suppose somebody would put food or whatever on a person who was walking. And now that person continues and walks outside. Votzion lechutz. And then he stops. Ma. Akirat gufo kakirat chefetz. Do we view the movement of his body from the rishos? Now, if he was continuing to walk and hadn't stopped, then there was definitely no akira that was done, right? It has to be a moment that foodstuff is being stopped, is in its place, is munach, and now walking on. So now, that means that the only case that we could talk about is actually where I load him up and he stops, or he was stopped when I loaded him. That's for sure. But the question is, if he now starts moving, did he lift everything out of the rishus when he started to move? Or was it I who did the akira by putting it on his body? I mean, it would seem from the Mishnah that it is I. Because where it was his hand, and I put it in his hand, it says I was potter, but so was he, because he didn't do the Akira. So this should be the same, no? So I want to know, Akirat Gufo, moving his body from a state of rest, Akirat Chefetz Mimakovodomi Umichayev, would he be Chayev in exactly the same way as if he himself had lifted up that thing from the ground? Or do we say that, no, it's the person who put the thing on him who now will be the one who did the Akira. Of course, he won't be Chayev because I completed it, but I won't be Chayev either. Omalei Chayav. Rebbe answered, Rav, he would be Chayev, and I know what you're thinking. Ein adom leyad. It's not the same as the case of the Yad in our Mishnah. My time, well, why is it not the same? Because gufo nayach, yado lo nayach, his body is at rest. So even though it says in our Mishnah that if I put my hand, I'm an onion, I put my hand indoors, the balabayit now puts something in my hand, it's the balabayit to do the akira, not me. That's because the hand was not at rest in the reshut of the balabayit. So if I simply would have moved my hand, I never removed what was in my hand from that reshut, because it wasn't at rest in that reshut. Now, had my hand been down on the ground, let's say, in that reshut, okay, my hand was resting on the ground. You now put something in my hand. Now I pick it up and remove it. Then, indeed, my yad was nayach. But my body is always nayach on the ground. I mean, unless I'm, you know, doing some type of metaphysical stuff. You know, therefore, I'm hovering. But generally speaking, if I'm not practicing my Indian exercises, or if I'm not running or walking, I'm at rest. So if I'm at rest and you put something on my body, that thing is at rest as my body is on the ground. Okay, now this is how Rashi learns it. He stresses the concept of the relationship to the ground, which is one way of understanding the Gemara. There's another girsa here, which Rashi rejects, and he brings it, Mishnah Rina Yado Batar Gufo Grira. Your hand is always going to be removed from where it is by the fact that it's attached to your body. In other words, we cannot view your hand as being an entity unto itself. The fact that it's part of your body means it will never be effectively settled in a different reshus than your body. It has a tendency to follow you around.
Yeah, that creates a problem. It has the first of the Mishnah in your
thigh. So in a case where your body is at rest and your hand is in the same reshus as your body, then whatever is in your hand is essentially attached to you and it therefore is at rest because you are. But a hand that is in now a circumstance in which it's a different space than your body can't be part of that space and isn't part of the space of your body either. And therefore, it's in nowhere land. So putting it in that hand cannot be considered a deposit into a different rishos. But by the same token, moving your hand couldn't be considered to be removal from the rishos in which it was, because it wasn't totally in that rishos. Now, as we mentioned yesterday, there exists a concept in terms of Shabbat, which is a non-rishus. Remember, we had the Rava's explanation that the shtayim shenar, by the way, Rashi was learning shtayim means the two rishuyot. According to the way Rava was learning, the shtayim means two chiyuvim through rishuyot. Not that it's mentioning the shtayim, the number of rishuyot. But the way Rashi was learning, the shtayim is rishut ha-yachid and rishut ha-rabim. There's actually arba rishuyot b'Shabbat. But midoraita, there's only two recognizable spaces. Rishut ha-yachid, rishut ha-rabim. They are defined by actual spatial ideas. In other words, they need to be defined through a set of coordinates that are set aside by a concept called mechitza and so on. Okay. However, anything that is not so set aside is viewed as being in a non-space. And that's called a makom ptur. Makom ptur means it's something that has no relevance to the idea of space at all, as far as Shabbat is concerned.
No man's land.
No. specifically, that's not the idea. That's what I'm trying to get across. It's a no space. In other words, it's the fact that Rishut needs to be well defined that creates a Makom Patur. It's not that Makom Patur is a space, but it's allowed to be moved to as a no man's land. Or not allowed to be moved to if it's a Carmelite. That's not the idea. It simply is a no space as far as the Torah is concerned. It's not in a particularized space. Okay? So since Hotzah means the changing of spatial coordinates in a particular way, you don't change anything when you start or end in a Makom Patur. That's the idea.
From that to which is the other or rabbin is not a change of Rishus.
Right. Well, and what about on the border between Rishus and Rabbin?
We'll talk about that. Those are issues that are discussed with Pharisees later on in the Masechta. The border conditions. But now, so getting back to this question over here. Since that's the case, again, this is the other Gersa. It's not the Gersa that Rashi has, but it's the Gersa that Tosis prefers. The idea over here is that your hand essentially boils down to a no space when it's not in the same place that your body is. Since Yado Batar Gufo Grira, there would be no way that you could be chayev by moving something that's in your hand from a different rishus, unless you actually picked it up out of that rishus. Because you cannot be oker something that is in your hand. Because by virtue of its being in your hand, it's no longer defined by the coordinates of the space in which it's in. And that's the meaning of Yado Batar Gufo Grira. Therefore, if somebody deposits something into your hand that's in another Rishut, or you move something in from your hand to another Rishut, he's not transferring it into another Rishut. Okay? That's how Tosus views it. And according to that, it may be that even if it's on the ground, it wouldn't make any nafkamina. Okay? So we'll see more about this later.
Would that also be considered Potter of Alasa?
But that we'll see. We're going to explore that today. Okay. So Tosis doesn't like Rashi's pshat because he says lechora it doesn't really matter. It's not the ground that's important. It's not the yad being close to the ground. It's not your feet being on the ground. That's not what we're looking at. We're looking where you are. Yeah. What? Yes, we'll see later on in a different sense. Yado Basar Gufo Grira is nogea a lot of other halachas, which is why Rashi just rejects it here because it doesn't seem to be what the Gemara needs to discuss at this point. Let's see later. Can we wait till we get there? Okay. Omar Lehi, but meanwhile, Reb Chiya objected to Rav's asking Rebbe this question. Why? Because they weren't learning Shabbat in the Beit HaMidrash at that time. So Amar Lehi Reb Chiya L'Rav Barpachti. Barpachti means the son of great people. Lo Amina L'Cha Kikoi Rebbe B'Hai Mesechta Lo Teshagim Mesechta. How many times do I have to tell you that when Rebbe is learning one Mesechta, you're not to ask him questions in a different Mesechta. Dilma Lav Adaite, because it may simply not be on his mind. And therefore, he might have given you some type of off-the-cuff answer that would have been inconsistent with the way that he would have seen it if his mind would have been on that Masechta. D'ilav d'Rabbi Gavra Rabba uksifte. If it wouldn't be that Rebbe is a very great man, you might have just now embarrassed him. Because he might have told you something which then he himself would have rejected. He would have told you something which wouldn't have stood up to a full investigation. Hashtamiyat Shapir Mashani Lacha. You're lucky this time. He gave you a good answer, because I know that he's right, from a bright. Detanya, Hayata Uno Chlino Mashkin Mi Baod Yom, Vutsiyan Lachutz Mishecha Shecha Chayav, Lefi She'eno Dome Liyadov. A person who was carrying something that he had picked up and put in his pocket before Shabbat began. And now he walks out of the house with it. Only, as Tosis explains, only when he had stopped moving before Shabbat began.
Picked
it up, stopped.
Oh, if he kept moving for the time, he kept walking all the way to Shabbat.
Right. Yeah. Stopped. Okay. Now it's Shabbat. He now walks out of the room, goes outside, and stops. He would be chayev. And the Braita puts in the words, because it's not like his hand. In other words, the Braita is directly addressing the issue in our Mishnah. Because that's basically what's done when the Ani removes his hand after the Balabait puts it into his hand. And nonetheless, it says the Ani is patur. So why is this person chayav? Because it's not like his hand. So we have Rashi's approach to why it's not like his hand. Tosis' approach to why it's not like his hand. Two Girsaot. They're very close to each other. It's questionable whether there actually is the difference that Tosis claims between the two Pshatim, but that we'll get into later.
So this is the way to think about it. This is a form of Kira. Type of a Kira.
It's not that that's the easiest way to think about it. That's precisely what it's addressing. Right. That is Akira. Mm-hmm. His body is at rest, and when he moves, he's being oker the chayfetz along with his body.
Is lotion of the brayta.
Yes, exactly. Words, the brayta specifically addressed what you, Rav, had asked Rebbe, and what Rebbe told you was a paraphrase of the brayta.
He had a peck on his back in the house.
And stopped before Shabbat. Because if he had picked up the peck and continued walking, and as he's walking, and he's got a large house, as he's walking, Shabbos falls.
Tosfos says, I'm going to approach Mishach HaShecha after it's dark.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm trying to explain. So if he had continued to walk, and now Shabbos falls and walks out of his door, he would be putter. Because he didn't do an Akira on Shabbos. You have to do a whole malach on Shabbos, right? So he would have had to have stopped and then started to move again.
That's called
on Shabbos.
When he starts walking again,
that's the Akira. That's what the issue is. Not the original picking it up. So we need to create a case where the Akira consists of his movement now on Shabbos as an Akira, Utsah, and Hanoch. Omer Abaye. Now, Abaye wants to address the status of the hand itself. Is the hand itself an actual no space in terms of having no implications for transference on Shabbos? Or is the hand a Rabbanan space? Now, there's a concept which is called a Karmelit. A Karmelit is a non-space Midioraita, which the Rabbanan turn into a third type of space, which is differentiated both from Rishut HaRabim and from Rishut HaYachid. We will see, and this is very confusing, we will see that there are other Rishuyot, which we relate to as a Karmali, which actually may be Rishut HaYachid's Diraisa, and the Rabbanan gave them dinim similar to a Karmali in terms of there being chomer like Rishut HaRab. For instance, in any Rishut HaYachid, I'm allowed to move as far as I want. In my house, I can move as far as I want with something and put it down again. In a Rishut HaRabim, once I move 4 amot from where I am, it's viewed as a different Rishut HaRabim. So each Rishut HaRabim, I'm prohibited in transferring from within a Rishut HaRabim from one set of coordinates to another.
Even if you don't stop?
No, only if I stop. Well, I mean, there may be Isurim Drabonim in not stopping as well. Well, we'll talk about it. It depends on the circumstances. There may be, if you started, then you can't move even if you intend not to stop. But that's because we include that as well. The same way we include the Potter in the Mishnah is an Isur without doing Akira and Anok. It's still an Isur Drabonim. That same Isur applies to Rishus Drabonim. You understand what I'm saying? But it's a different, it's not a new takana. It's that I give certain rishuyos to chumra of Rishut HaRabim, even though the Rishut HaYachid. That should not be confused with the Karmelit, which is neither Rishut HaYachid nor Rishut HaRabim, in which I answer movement both from it to Rishut HaRabim and to Rishut HaYachid. Okay? Now, Abaye wants to know, the Mishnah clearly has told us the hand is neither Rishut HaRabim nor Rishut HaYachid. That's obvious, because if the Baal HaBayit removes something from the hand of the Ani, he's patur. And if the Ani removes something from the hand of the Baal HaBayit in his Rishus, he's patur. Which means that the hand can't be Rishut HaRabim, or the balabayit would be chayiv. And it can't be Rishut HaYachid, or the Ani would be chayiv, because he's taking it out of Rishut HaYachid into Rishut HaRabim. So it's neither. But the question is it something else? Does it have a din of a Rishut HaRabanan? The difference would be, it wouldn't be Nogei the balabayit to the Ani, because they're not allowed to remove anyway, since it came from a different Rishut. The crazy difference would be for the owner of the hand. That's usually the person that is attached to the hand. So in that case, would he be allowed to bring his hand back into where it was? Or being as his hand is now turned into a different rishus, the moment it crosses into a different space, he's got to keep his hand out there for the rest of the day. That's the question. So that's what I want to know, says Abaya. Look, pshita li yado shel adam eina lo krishut rabim v'lo krishut hayachid. So it's obvious it's neither one of the Dioraita Rishuts. Ki Rishut HaRabim lo damya miyadu de'ani. It's obviously not a Rishut HaRabim, or the Baal HaBayit would be chayiv taking it out of the Rishuts of the Ani. It's not like Rishut HaYachid that I see clearly miyadu de Baal HaBayit. But my question is, boy Abaye, but what about Yado Shel Adam? Mau Shetayaseh Ki Karmelit? Can his hand become a Carmelite, a lotion of forest-like areas, Hursha, in the Pasuk we call Carmelite, Yaro v'Carmelo. So that type of thing, an open area, which is nonetheless Osir min Rabbanan, is that considered to be, is your hand considered to be a Carmelite? Mikansua Rabbanan, implication would be that if it were, that the Rabbanan would have then been kones you, li ahadure legabe, from bringing it back to where you were. Now, if we use that word kansua, as it appears here, it would only apply to a case where you started doing something bi'isur. So over here, that Ani never should have put his hand into the Rishut of the Baal HaBayit. The Baal HaBayit should never have put his hand into the Rishut of the Ani. And since he did, now the other guy was kind enough not to remove it from him. No, I will not do that malacha. Oh boy, what do I do now? So there the shaila is, can I bring my hand back in? That's kansua. If it's even where you didn't start doing it b'yisur, then it would have said asua. Did they give it a different din? And then it would have nothing to do with whether I started doing it for the wrong reason. Tosfos says we should be goris asrua. It's only later on that we deal with the question of knas. So that's my question. Can I actually bring my hand back in? According to Rashi, where I started, but yes, sir. According to Tosfos, under any event. Well, Tashma, let's bring a riot from the following braita. A guy is in his house, it's full, he has a handful of fruit, and he puts his hand now outside the window. Tani chada asur la'achzira. One braita said, you cannot bring that hand back in. Good luck, buddy. And Tani Idag Mutalagzira. The other brayta says you can bring your hand back in. My love, Vakam Ifli, apparently, this is a machloketanoim. Mar Savarki Karmeli Damya, Umar Savarki Karmeli Damya. And that's your answer, Abaye. No, that's not my answer. Over there, it's very possible. To Kuli Alma Karmeli Damya, Velokasha, Kan Lamata Mehasara, Kan lemala miasara. The difference may be where the window is. Because you see, one of the interesting things about a Rishut HaRabim is that the notion of an open space, which is nonetheless well defined, which seems to be a contradiction in terms, is only when it's close to a surface. So it has to be within 10 tefachim of a surface, then we can use the surface to provide coordinates in that space. But if it's in the middle of the air somewhere, it's again, it's back in a nowhere space. So once you're now 10 tefachim above the surface of the Rishut HaRabim, you are now in a nowhere space. So if I took my hand, took it out of the window, and my window was a second story window, I didn't do anything wrong. I would have been allowed l'chatchila to put something into a no space. So there's no problem in that. So why in the world would my hand then be meaningfully somewhere else? According to Rashi's pshat, I certainly didn't do anything wrong, because if I put it into a no space, I would have been allowed to do it l'chatchila. according to Tosis, we have to jiggle this a bit. Because what's the difference whether it, I mean, if I define my hand as a carmelite, perhaps it could be a carmelite even in a no space. Now, so he would have to change the nature of the definition of a carmelite, that it itself needs to be within some space. Okay. So maybe that's the difference, that they're actually not arguing with each other at all, these two brayta. They're talking about two different windows. One's talking about the first story window, and one's talking about the second story window. Or I can give you another answer. Maybe indeed both cases are talking about a first story window, and both agree that it's not a carmelite. And the question is whether the Rabbanan ossered you from bringing your hand back in, not through a manipulation of the din of the hand space, but rather just to get your goat. Kan mi ba'odion, kan mi shechashecha. If you did something wrong, meaning you stuck your hand out after Shabbat had already begun, because then if you indeed had dropped it, you would have been chayit. So over there they answer you for bringing it back in. You know, goodnik, you shouldn't have done that. Sit there with your hand out all day, as far as we're concerned. Exactly, enjoy. But mi ba'odion, your hand was stuck out of the window. Mi ba'odion, you didn't do anything wrong. So over there, lokan sura rabbanan, in that case, they did not give you any kind of knas. Not a knas, it's a knas for doing something wrong. You'll pay for it by leaving your hand out there. But it doesn't affect the halacha of changing your hand into a carmelite or not.
Being a teacher.
Yeah. Says the Gemara, wait a minute. I mean, wait a minute. If we're going to talk about a difference between you did it in the day or you did it at night, it makes much more sense to have said that if you did it in the daytime, we'll force you to leave your hand out there, because even if you end up dropping the perot and you can't hold them for so long, you won't be chayek. Mashenkin, if we tell you to hold your hand out there holding those perot when you did it be yisur, then if you drop the perot, you'll be chayev. We don't want to put you in a position in which you will have ended up doing a malacha v'otzah, do we? So why don't we look at it the other way, which is Tosfos says, which would have then immediately popped out of existence because it would have been a joke. In other words, what we're really saying is the whole thing is absurd. Obviously, we can't be knas you for doing nothing wrong. But the only way to look at this is to do it bedavka the other way. So we're certainly not going to do it this way.
I don't understand.
Saying, look, if you want to talk about a knas, it makes much more sense to give the guy a knas in a way that he won't do an iser. Not where the knas itself will cause him to do chilul Shabbat. No? And that's what you're doing. You're causing him now to be mechalel Shabbat, because he's going to let go of these fruit, likely it is. Who's got a grip that's going to last the next 24 hours? He's going to tire, drop the food, and then bring his hand in. So if he drops the food, he's going to be Mechal Shabbat. So you should have done it the other way around.
Which is,
if you stuck your hand out during the day, you should have been smart enough to bring it back before Shabbat. Now you're going to have to pay by leaving it there the whole day. Right?
How does that help? He still has...
Exactly! So what it means is we're reducing the whole thing to a joke. So it's ridiculous. But why don't you recognize that you've created an absurd situation over here? The real thing that you ought to do, you can't do. So as a substitute, you're doing something that you shouldn't do. What does that mean? Okay, so since that is not even an issue in the Beit HaMidrash, nobody is bothered by this. It's clear that indeed we do not take into consideration the possible implications of Chilul Shabbat that may come as a result of a takona min Rabbanan. In other words, the Rabbanan can create situations, Barnei Adir, the Rabbanan can create situations in which, as a result of their supposed concern to prevent people from coming to Chilul Shabbat, under certain circumstances, it will cause people to come to Chilul Shabbat.
Is that the Shem?
Hmm? Can you hear me?
What is the expression et Hashem from Brachos at the end?
Eislas Hashem? No. In other words, it's just simply that we take into consideration the local impact of an exer, the fact that ultimately this could lead to problems, is not what we need to take into consideration. So, and that itself is a solution to a question that was asked by Rabbi Bibar Abai. Continues the Gemara. Since nobody is bothered by that inconsistency, and try to do it in the other direction, we should therefore conclude that the solution to Rabbi Bibar Abai's question, to wit, the boy Rabbi Bibar Abai, hidbik pat betanur. Here's an interesting thing. The Rabbanan said, you're not allowed to take bread off of the edge, you know, the way that they used to bake bread, or they break the, what do they call that?
Eshtanur,
where they bake it up against the edge of an oven. And you've got to take it off. There's this little wooden thing that you poke it off, and it pops into your shovel like a fair. You take it out. Now, that's not a malacha. However, the Rabbanan asserted it. It's more of a skill. It's called a chorchma, not a malacha. So it's a skill. The Rabbanan asserted it on Shabbos. Rabbanan asserted it. So now, what about a case where a guy... They asserted removing it on Shabbos, whether it was baked before or baked after. We're going to ask this question now. Suppose a guy, not realizing it was Shabbos, puts the, or realizing, whatever the case may be, we'll talk about that tomorrow, he sticks his bread on, it starts to bake on Shabbos, somebody comes along and says, what's the matter with you on Shabbos? Oh my God, I'll take it down before it bakes. No, you can't take it down. You're going to have to let yourself be killed. Because after all, I mean, our Rabbanan said you can't take it off the edge of the tanur. Well, we'll see. That's what we'll talk about tomorrow. So the question is, did the Rabbanan say you can't take it off, even if the guy's going to be Machal Shabbos because I said he can't take it off? Or in such a case, would they say, well, certainly if you need to take it off to avoid Chilul Shabbos, we're not going to answer something and claim it's going to bring you to Chilul Shabbos. That would be ridiculous. That was Rabbi Barbai's question. It appears from here that we don't care about the implications of the possibility of actually causing Chilul Shabbat under certain circumstances because of our takana. The takana cannot stand. So his question was, he'd big bak betanur on Shabbat. And now he wants to take it down before he's chayav a chatat. So he tiru lo lirdota, kodem shiavo lidei chiyuv chatat, o lo he tiru. Bring a proof from here, tifshot, o lo he tiru. If they didn't conclude this in the Beit HaMidrash, nobody even talked about the question of having put your hand out before Shabbat, we're ready to say we make a knas if we put your hand out after Shabbat, apparently we don't care. Okay, fine, so, you're right. Hello, Kasha, what's bothering you? So, tifshot, fine. Then that's the answer, okay? I mean, nobody said his question has to stand forever. Or, and the truth is, it's not really exactly the same. Ibai deima liolam lo tifshot, velo kasha kan b'shogeg, kan b'mezid. The difference is whether you do it on purpose or not. Could be b'shogeg. Lo kamsu a rabbanu. The question of Rabbi was if a guy didn't know it was Shabbos and he put it there. So there, they weren't konesim, maybe, because he did it b'shogeg. But the question over here is, in a case where a guy stuck his hand out, holding his pears b'mezid, and that's where we say katsur rabbanan, maybe that's different. You can't prove it from our case, or maybe there's another reason you can't prove it. Maybe both of them b'shogeg, and the question is a different question. B'katsur shogeg atu mezid k'miflegeg. Maybe we're dealing with the issue of whether a knas exists when done b'shogeg, since it would exist when done b'mezid. But that doesn't necessarily imply that where the knas would exist, that it wouldn't apply even in cases of chilul Shabbat. So mar savar kansu shogeg atu mezid, mar savar lo kansu shogeg atu mezid. Maybe that's the machlokus in the braita, or maybe actually there's no knas at all of shogeg atu mezid. I'll give you a completely different explanation of the issue between the two brachot. Nibay temeli olam lo kansu v'lo kasha. Kan lo tachatzer, kan lachatzer acheret. The difference in the two brachot is not where the window was, not whether it was done in the day or after the nightfall, not whether it was done b'shogeg or done b'mezid. It's very simple. The question was, can you bring your hand back? No. Can you bring your hand in? Yes. Meaning, stick it into some other window, into another place, where it wasn't where you intended to put it. So in other words, we don't want you to put it where it was. That's the question. Can you bring your hand back to the same place where it was? Can I put it somewhere else? No, you can't. Even though it's not going from Rishut HaRabim to Rishut HaRabim. What's the difference? What's the difference whether I deposit it on one side of the fence, which is at somebody else's house, or I deposit it on the other side of the fence, which is my house? Maishna. What do you mean, Maishna? When you finish pouring me out a half a ton of salt, I'll tell you. I'm not going to just tell you for free. I mean, it's worth something. Do a little bit of work, and then I'll tell you. You guys sit there, fall asleep, and then one answers. Why should you get answers? Prove that it makes a difference. That's one approach. The other approach is, man, you could pour salt on this all day long, and it would never be the same. It's no comparison. The difference is, hatam le'davina machshavto, hakadavina machshavto. We don't let you do the thing that you wanted to do. Namely, you wanted to remove it from this chutz, so that was part of what you wanted to do. That you ain't going to do, even if it's somewhere else. Even if it's to a different chutz or not to Rishus HaRabim. But you can bring it back to where it was and get nothing at all achieved. That, yes. Okay. So, because the next time we're worried, you'll throw it into Rishus HaRabim. We're going to let you do it into another chutz. And maybe that's what they're talking about. They're not talking about a transfer. They don't want you to be able to transfer something, even though it's a drabonan, because they don't want you coming the day after you'd be right.